Hey everyone, it's Hannah. I wanted to quickly ask, if you are enjoying the podcast, please leave us a 5-star review. It goes a long way in getting the show in front of other listeners. If you listen on a platform that doesn't do reviews, please follow us on social media, like the show, or leave a comment. Thank you. We love you guys, and we hope you enjoy the show.
A long-ass cork.
You're listening to The Tales We Tell, a podcast about spooky stories, unsolved mysteries, and local lore. I'm your host, Hannah Parch.
And I'm Katie.
Welcome back! I'm glad to have you back.
I'm not dying, I swear.
It's okay. I believe you. I would have you even if you were.
It's been a long couple of weeks. I mean, it was great being up in the mountains. Yeah. You know, my aunt and my uncle came to visit, and they got to see the place, and we had a great time, and that was awesome. Got to go to a fun winery, but also it was, you know, it was 24/7 of being on mom duty.
Yeah.
Granted, I had help this time.
Yeah.
So, it was, you know, like, that's totally doable if I've got help. But then, you know, we come home, and I got 2 days technically where he's at school, but I'm like starting to feel sick, and I'm like, I need to rest because I've got him all weekend, but I also have a whole lot of housework that needs to be done, so like trying to balance rest and work, and then all weekend with the critter, it was
one of those vacations that was not necessarily restful.
Yes and no.
Yeah. Well, you gave me this beautiful sticker that I love.
I might have abandoned you, but I definitely brought you back some treasures from the mountains.
I'm going to describe it because it's amazing. It has two Sasquatch, a mama and a daddy. Well, a male and a female.
Yeah. It could be boyfriend, girlfriend.
It could be boyfriend, girlfriend. Who knows?
There's no evidence that they have a child.
That's true. And the girl has pigtails that are flying in the wind. And it says, Virginia is for lovers. And I love it. And the moon is a heart.
There's a QR code you got to do real quick, too.
So that's why we have it out. So let's see. This might be it.
So cute.
I know. I was waiting on...
Yeah. It says Bigfoot Country.
It's true. I was waiting on the lady
I thought
Squatch
he was,
to come in.
I thought he was going to meet Girly Squatch, too.
I love that, though.
But
I'm,
yeah.
I'm going to make everyone do that when they look at my sticker. Thank you. I love that. She also provided the wine that we're drinking, which is delicious.
Technically, it's provided by Chateau Morissette.
Oh.
So... Okay. There's a ton of wineries in Virginia, and this is the second one that we've been to that's near our property, and it was awesome. Like, it was a gorgeous day, and they've got a couple, you know, they've got, like, this big yard with, you know, different tables and picnic tables and umbrellas and whatnot, but there's also a couple of, like, these little gazebo-type seating areas.
Yeah.
And you can look out, you know, it's kind of on a ridge, so, like, either way you look, there's a pretty nice view.
Yeah.
Of just, like, some, you know, hills and greenery and landscape, and, you know, the inside, like, the outside, everything, the building is impressive and cool, and the wines were all pretty good, too.
Yeah.
And there was a big, giant Newfoundland there to greet you.
I saw a critter with a dog.
Barnabas. Dog.
Barnabas.
He's obsessed. Because, you know, like, Shelton and I would take turns being at the bar to taste different wines. Because, you know, it's like, all right, well, basically, here's our list of available wines.
Yeah.
Just whatever you want to try.
Mm-hmm.
And Ryan Morissette, one of the, I think he said 7 sons?
Oh, my gosh. Sons? All sons?
No, I think there's 2 daughters.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. But still, 9 kids!
Jeez! It's 7 boys.
I may be remembering wrong. Oh, he told us that Barnabas was his baby. Aww. And then there was another dog, and I didn't get the other dog's name, but he was laying, or she, I don't know, they were laying on a little bed over by the dog treat tasting bar.
Oh, I love
it. I know, it was precious. So it was like a couple of different, like, really cute decorative jars with different dog cookies in there that you could
so
get for your dogs or their dogs. But, yeah, so, you know, we would kind of take turns. I'd be at the bar listening and learning about the wines, tasting a few while Shelton was chasing down Walker, who was just wanting to go run back up touch the dog.
Just touch the dog.
Touch.
I love that.
Like,
so
not
much.
Even pet him. Just like, poke. And I don't think the dog even felt it because there was so much thick fur. He was just passed out, just chilling. He was a cute, sweet dog. Aww. But the wines were all pretty good, and we enjoyed sitting out there. My aunt and uncle bought a bottle, so we sat on the gazebo. Nice. Critter ate a whole bunch of cheese.
Love that.
Yep.
Well, I'm glad the weather was nice for y'all up there, because it sucked down here.
Yeah, I heard. I saw something about, like, oh, is it gonna, is the rain gonna cancel the fireworks?
I think it did. Mm-hmm. I don't know. I was driving for Lyft that night.
Later that I think it, like, postponed them if
Yeah, well, there was definitely some, because I saw some, but in general, the weather was, like, upper 90s and or raining. Like, if it wasn't just god-awful hot, like, butthole of Satan, it was raining. And my in-laws were in town, and I was like, I'm sorry you guys picked just the worst time. We were on the phone with Jarek's other sister, who didn't come down. She lives in Boston. And they were telling us that they were going to come down for Thanksgiving if we were hosting again. And they were like, yeah, we hear the weather down there is a little better that time of year. I was like, yeah, you guys are not missing much right now. Like, please wait till November. It'll be better, I promise. Like, I can at least promise. I mean, God willing, that global warming doesn't take us all out by then. I can hopefully promise that it's not going to be 97 degrees that weekend.
It's so, a decent chance it won't be.
You know, but...
I mean, 87 is still fairly likely.
You know, but could be in the upper 70s, mid-80s, but, like, definitely not as hot as it was, but... do you want to open Critter's present?
Yeah, I do.
This was a very impulsive buy at the farmer's market.
Is it?
Oh. It's a spider, not an octopus.
Well, yeah, because, well, I guess they both have 8 legs, huh?
Yes. But they're called critters. She called them critters.
So cute.
And I was like, oh, I have to buy one. And she had a little ghost one that I almost got.
He already has a ghost.
Oh, well, I'm so glad I didn't get him one.
This is precious. Thank you. He's going to love chewing on the legs.
Oh, great. I also figured, I was like, I feel like he's starting a collection of, like, knitted stuffies, so this will just add to that.
Because Yvonne, one of my friends in my knitting group, I feel like almost every week I show up and she's got a different knitted, or not knitted, because she crochets, a crocheted animal that she has made for Critter. Like, he's got the turtle and the squirrel. The turtle... Not only is he a cute, soft, velvety turtle, his feet have little rattles in them.
Oh, I love that.
And there's a stingray. Yeah.
Yeah. I love.
Quick critter story before we get into the spooky story,
please.
Tonight he had a little bit of an ordeal.
Uh-oh.
It finally happened. I'm surprised it took this long to happen, but tonight he pooped in the tub.
Oh!
And he was very upset about
it. Oh, poor guy.
I know. I was a little bit worried by his reaction. Because my reaction, I thought, was fine. Like, I wasn't freaking out. So I didn't think that my reaction was upsetting him at all. But, like, you know, he was squatting in the tub. And, like, he does it. He'll stand up and he'll squat back down because he likes scooping up the water and then standing up and dumping it out in, like, his cups. But he was squatting and then he was grunting. And I'm like, are you pooping? Are you pooping in the tub? You know, just trying to, like, again, not...
Yeah.
You know, just whatever.
It's not the worst thing in the world. I mean, just get him out of the tub.
Again, I'm surprised it took this long to happen. Yeah. I was expecting, like, a massive blowout, especially when he was younger, too.
Yeah.
And, And he kind of laughed at me. And I was like, you did. You pooped in the tub. Uh-huh. And that's when he looked behind him and saw poops floating in the tub. And then freaked out.
Oh.
I'm talking like screaming, crying, reaching for me. And I'm like, okay, hold on. So I grab, you know, his cup, fill it up with fresh, clean water.
Yeah.
And dump it to rinse him off because he's got bubbles on him. And I pick him up.
Uh-huh.
And I go ahead and hold him to me because he's just clinging.
Yeah.
And I set him on, you know, I always lay out his towel on the bed.
Yeah.
So I can lay him down and dry him off and wrap him up. And most of the time, he's rolling and squirming and trying to get out of there.
Yeah.
And he's just laying there with this look on his face of like, what just happened?
He probably doesn't understand the poop.
Yeah. No. I mean, because he's not close to potty training or anything. Yeah. So, like, he doesn't understand. And I'm just like, I'm trying to, like, smile and laugh and just, like, reassure him, like, it's okay, you're fine, you're still a good boy, everything's okay. And so he just let me lay, like, he just laid there, like, perfectly still in his shock. Well, I wrapped him up and I carried him to his room, and my not at all cuddly, super squirmy baby was just snuggled up into me.
Aww.
And so, like, normally after I've gotten him out of the tub and I've gotten him wrapped up like a burrito in the towel, by the time I get down the hall to his room, he's squirmed halfway out of it.
Yeah.
And I barely can get him to the changing table and put him down before he's falling out of my arms. I was in there. I just kind of like held him and rocked him for a little bit, still wrapped in the towel before putting him on the, to give him his diaper.
Traumatizing.
I know. And then, you know, I set him, I've put his night-night diaper on, set him on the ground, and I go over to hang his towel on the baby gate like I always do.
Yeah.
And he loses it, starts crying, and like, not even screaming, just terrified, pitiful tears.
Oh my gosh.
And I'm like, I'm not leaving you, huh? And I just threw the towel down. I went over, I'm like, I left, it's okay, it's okay. Like, super clingy. And he finally, I think, got over it by almost bedtime. But, like, I kid you not, like, me trying to like, get up, I was like, okay, I think you're mellow and over it now.
Yeah.
I need to go clean this out of the tub. Like, while they're still solid, before they just turn into mush, like, I can scoop them out and put them in the toilet. And just to start the clean out of the tub process. And he was not happy that I left him.
Wow.
But he's fine now.
Well, I have never thought about, like, when you learn that poop leaves your body and is a thing.
I don't know. It's sometime in the potty training process. Like I said, we are, he is 16 months today, or at the time of this recording.
Yeah.
So we are not close to potty training. Yeah. Like.
So he knows before he's supposed to. Maybe. Knowledge he's not supposed to have.
Forbidden knowledge. No. Because I know that at the daycare, I don't think they start really doing or like helping with potty training until they're two.
Yeah, that makes sense.
So, I'm not in a rush to try and potty train him now if it's not going to be reinforced at school.
Yeah.
So, like,
it makes sense.
It's just going to prolong the process, make it confusing and difficult for him, so.
Yeah.
He'll enjoy the spider, though. That'll make up for it.
I love that. Well, I have a couple announcements. The first one is just a shout-out to Tim, because I forgot to relay his message to you from last week, which is that he was also getting Taco Bell.
Oh, I got Taco Bell, and it was perfect.
Nice.
Because it was just good enough to satisfy my craving.
Yeah.
But also just disappointing enough to make me not want it again anytime soon.
Yeah, that's always good. We had pizza last night, and I haven't had, like, I mean, not that pizza's necessarily a junk food, but, like, I've been trying to eat pretty healthy, so I haven't had, like, you know, pizza in a while, and I was like, this is gonna be great, you know, like, occasionally having something like that, and I had some of it, and I think what did me in was the garlic bites, because they had a deal on them, so we got those, and, right after I had my, like, two slices and my handful of garlic bites, I was like, yep, feel like probably not going to have pizza for a while after this.
I know. I'm not.
because not worth it.
So I don't know if it's just from, like, this sinus crud that I've got that had made me nauseous. But, like, before I started feeling sick, I was feeling sick to my stomach.
Yeah.
And it was, like, every time I ate, I was in pain not long after. Like, almost every meal.
Yeah.
And there were some meals that I didn't feel sick after, where I had, you know, like, some protein and vegetables and no carbohydrates or anything. Right. And I'm like, well, no, I had carbohydrates, but they were potatoes, so I didn't have any gluten, starches, and carbohydrates and everything.
Don't you hate when...
But I'm like, you know what? I don't think I've got a gluten sensitivity or celiac or anything. But, you know, one of my book characters did, and I'm like, actually, there's a lot of things in common with this character and what I'm suffering and have been dealing with lately. So I'm just going to do that simple elimination test. Like, I'm going to take it out of my diet.
Yep.
And if I start feeling better, then okay, maybe I'm onto something.
Yeah.
If I don't start feeling better, then that's clearly not the problem.
Yeah.
And I'm starting to feel better, and I'm like, well, I'll wait until, like, I'm all the way, like, over this sinus crud. Because, again, that might have been a contributing factor to it. And then I'll reintroduce it, because I am feeling a lot better.
Yeah.
And see what my reaction is. And if it's poor, then, well, I might be out of eating delicious foods for the rest of my life. Who knows?
I had a similar thing when I cut out a lot of... I cut down on carbs, but I mostly cut out bread. And that's when my headaches went away. And I was like, fuck me. I was like, damn it. Is it the gluten? Okay.
And I have always said, and I still continue to say that, gluten is the most delicious ingredient.
It is!
Because the second you take it out of something, it is nasty. The only exception are pretzels.
Oh.
Those Snyder's gluten-free pretzels.
Yeah.
Especially the one that have, like, the honey mustard and onion flavoring.
Ooh, that sounds good.
Those are phenomenal. They're crunchier than regular pretzels. They're really good.
Okay.
And that's the only gluten-free thing that I've ever had that, like, you know, not naturally gluten-free things. Because things that are naturally gluten-free can be delicious.
Yeah. You should try the gluten-free... Like the Red Lobster Cheddar Bay biscuit stuff, like the mix that you make at home. They have a gluten-free version that you get. I got it at like Walmart or something.
Interesting.
Those are good.
Because I used that recently for chicken cobbler.
Ooh.
Yes.
Oh, wait, sorry. Chicken cobbler. I don't know why I heard cobbler and my brain immediately went sweet.
Because.
And I had to reset.
Yeah.
And I was like, no, wait, that sounds great. That sounds really good.
No, it's basically... chicken pot pie, but in a different presentation.
God, I miss chicken pot pie.
So if I could have a gluten-free option of that, that'd be great. But again, I'm not going to just buy all sorts of gluten-free snacks and whatnot. Like, I'm going to just try to be like, okay, I still have a healthy and balanced diet.
Yeah.
Just avoid the gluten.
Yeah.
Because, you know, I looked up, like, celiacs and whatnot, and I was like, is this something that you can actually get as an adult? Yes. You know what sometimes can trigger adults to have celiac?
Pregnancy
and childbirth. I'm like, huh.
Great. Wonderful.
But, you know, obviously there's the intestinal discomfort.
Yeah.
But then there's other things like brain fog, irritability, some headaches, I think. You know, just other non-intestinal symptoms. Or joint pain is a common thing. Like, well, I mean, I've always had joint pain.
Yeah, I love when the symptoms are also all, like, could also be symptoms of, like, your period or COVID or...
That was the frustrating thing about pregnancy, and I'm like, everything is a symptom. Friggin' pregnancy carpal tunnel. Oh, who knew? I'm never gonna let that go.
So much to look forward to. I can't wait. Well, okay, two more announcements. They both have to do with last week's episode, which...
I haven't listened to yet.
It's so fucking chaotic. It was really, really fun to record. I feel really bad for Jarrett because I think we ended up recording for like 3.5 hours. We took a small break in between where we just like muted the mic and just like chatted. So like, well, you
we've
can obviously
never done that.
I was like, you can obviously just cut that part out. Like, it's very easy. Hannah is just one of those people that she makes me laugh at everything. So like, I couldn't get through.
That's my job. Damn it.
It was very silly. So anyways, one of my questions, because I forgot everything, all my information fell out of my head, was, which I'll see if you know the answers to both of these. Do you know what U-boat stands for?
I mean, I know it's a submarine.
Yes.
I would assume underwater boat.
Undersea boat. Hmm. Which makes sense if I, again, had been thinking
clearly.
Yeah,
because, I mean, typically submarines aren't in freshwater.
Yeah. So Hannah Cox gave us this answer. She said, technically it stands for Unterseed, whatever, the German for it. Which it sounds very similar to undersea boat. So, Dad, you're off the hook. You don't have to tell me anymore. Also, I second-guessed myself when I said that the water, when the people on the Titanic were in the water, I second-guessed myself when I said it was 28 degrees. That was correct. That was a correct number. Do you know why? I thought I was wrong because I was like, that's below freezing. That's below the freezing point of water.
Is it because it was in Celsius?
Just kidding.
28 degrees Celsius.
I was like, I feel like that's much warmer, but because it was salt water.
Yeah.
As soon as I read it, I was like, duh, Hannah. Golly. Okay. Anyways, those are my 2 points on last week. And also, thank you if you have gotten through that episode, because I'm still listening to it, and I'm enjoying it. Again, utter chaos. Just very chaotic.
Well, speaking of still listening to something... Mm-hmm. I wanted to do a quick shout out to any moms that might be listening. And I just have a simple wish for you.
Okay.
That you are able to listen to this episode without anyone needing anything from you.
Ooh, let's manifest that.
Yeah.
Good vibes.
No coworkers, no spouses, no children, no friends, no pets.
Yes.
No strangers.
Go sit in your car.
I wish that you can listen to this for as long as you're able to. Like, if you're just, like, on a lunch break or a drive or something, as long as you're able to, without anyone needing anything from you.
I love that. Watch, this is going to be one of the episodes where Jarek bursts in with, like, a
because he needs question. Something from us.
Okay. So I told you this was a spooky episode.
I'm very excited.
I know, I am too. I'm going to tell you about the Union Screaming House. Okay.
Is that on the thing that I sent you?
Oh, I don't know. I didn't even look. You should.
Oh, well, good. Don't look. Oh,
okay.
And I'll do all of those.
Okay. So I actually heard about this on And That's Why We Drink on April 30th. And I immediately wrote it down and I was like, I have to wait. It's in Missouri, by the way.
Okay.
If that helps you find it on
yeah,
the map.
It is not on. So yeah, don't.
Okay.
Don't look at these. These are mine.
Okay. So, And That's Why We Drink covered it at the end of April. And I wrote it down. I was like, I'm going to do it, but I got to wait a little bit of time so that it's not right after. Then I requested the book that is written about it. And then the book came in from the library, which is...
The book that you say you weren't hiding from me.
Hiding. I was just trying to put it somewhere. This is the book. Called The Uninvited. Mm. And it's written by the guy who experienced the haunting, which is Stephen LaChance.
All right.
Also, I'm going to tag Stephen in this episode. I went on a journey with this man. So, Stephen, please listen. If you're listening, hello, hi, let's be friends. I have a lot of stuff that I want to say.
You have some feelings.
I have so many feelings. Listen, I started reading this book and I was like, okay, I'm skeptical. I started out skeptical for some, which we'll get into.
I always come into everything skeptical.
And then, like, halfway through, I was like, well, let me look up this guy real quick. And then I found out he had an Instagram. So I jumped on his Instagram and I skipped ahead because I had to know, like, happy ending or not. Don't worry. We got a happy ending. We love Steven. Okay, so pretty much all of this comes from the book, from the firsthand account. I highly recommend everyone read it. It was a very easy read. I read it in a week, obviously, because y'all know I don't prep for these more than a week ahead. And I am just going to take everything that he says at face value, because what else am I going to do? Also, I believe he uses like pseudonyms or fake names for everyone in the books. Or everyone. They're all real people, but he's using all, whatever. You know what I'm saying.
Yes. I think we all get it.
Yeah, you got it. Okay. All right. So Union, Missouri is located about 50 miles outside of St. Louis, and it is just a small rural town. You know the kind.
I do.
I'm picturing the town.
I'm intimately familiar with small rural towns. Just outside of a small rural town, because I was in such the rural area that we weren't even in the town proper.
Ah, yes. I was picturing the town that I lived in before I came here. And also the house that I lived in before I came here. And I was like, oh God, what if it was haunted?
I've lived in a couple of small rural towns.
Yeah. So just picture that. Mm-hmm. And I'm sure they're all the same.
But in Missouri.
Yeah, but in Missouri.
It's very flat there.
I've never been, so I wouldn't know. I get it mixed up with Mississippi and the other ones. I couldn't really tell you where Missouri was on a map. I assume it's south? No?
It's Midwest.
Oh, nope. See?
Here, let's
pull up the map. I definitely thought it was part of. Yeah, show me on a map.
I'm going to pull up a map for you. Louisiana is his boots.
Uh huh.
Arkansas is part of his legs. Blah.
Oh, Ohio is his face.
Iowa is his
face. Iowa, not Ohio.
See there, that little bump there?
Yeah.
Is his nose.
Okay, so he's like, Missouri's the torso.
Yeah, and Tennessee is the plate of holding, Kentucky Fried Chicken.
I like.
And then Minnesota is his chef's hat.
Nice. What a good way, fun way for me to remember things. Mm-hmm. Okay.
So. And it's not that flat. I was wrong.
As we look at a topography of it.
We did a 14-day excursion from New Orleans into the Rockies.
Oh.
And so we did, you know, from New Orleans through Texas, Oklahoma, Kansas, and then over to Colorado.
Uh-huh.
Did Utah, Wyoming, Montana, North Dakota, South Dakota, Nebraska, and then we came back. We dipped in, I think we came in through a little bit of Missouri and Arkansas. I don't remember the last little bit, because the last bit was like, we're just getting home, like, jeez. Everyone's just done with everything. We'd lived exhausting. In a 15 passenger vans for 2 weeks and camping most of the time. I say 15 passenger van. Everybody, there was two, and everybody had their own bench.
Okay.
So like that bench, like sure we had campsites and hotel rooms.
Yeah.
But that was our home base. Yeah. And so like anytime we'd split up, and other people would ride in your van,
mm-hmm.
they're like somebody's in my spot, and it's like you get back and you're like. My snacks have been moved.
Ooh.
My things have been touched.
Ooh, hate that. Yuck. Okay, so Stephen LaChance was born January 3rd, 1965 in St. Louis. He, I believe, was the second youngest, and I think he had 5 siblings. I had to kind of dig through a lot of context to get there. And I think there was, like, a pretty big age gap between, like, his older siblings. He had, like, all brothers and one sister who was, like, close in age to him. And they were raised Lutheran by their parents. He grew up partially in the suburbs of St. Louis, and then they moved to Franklin County when he was 11 to a town just outside of Union. So, still a rural town. So, he grew up kind of in a small rural town. He's familiar with Union. He got married in 1988. Do the math on that. He was very young. Not very young. Didn't mean to say that. He's younger than we were when we got married. And that same year, he and his wife had their first child, Lydia. And then in 1989, they had Michael.
Woohoo! 89's a good year for kids.
Yeah. And then they skipped my year. And then in 1991... they had Matthew. So, when we're talking about the story, remember that the kids are basically our age in the story. Mm-hmm. Like, okay. Because the story is going to take place in, like, 2001.
Okay.
Okay.
So when we were 11. Well, when I was 11, 10.
I was, yeah. So in 1993, Stephen's older and only sister, Janice, died very suddenly and very unexpectedly. Mm. He said that she, like, lay down for a nap and then just didn't wake up. And I kind of got the impression that, like, it was kind of inconclusive what she had died of, or, like, they didn't really...
Maybe it was, like, some sort of heart condition.
Yeah.
I knew somebody who was very young, like, early 40s, mm-hmm. that basically went home and collapsed, and mm-hmm. she had this heart condition that she had no idea about.
Jeez.
And just her heart just quit one day. Jeez. It was, like, right before Christmas, too. It was awful.
Oh, gosh.
She's such a nice person.
Yeah, so Janice's death was, like, very unexpected. She had, I think, 2 kids that she left behind, and it was just, like, a big shock to the family, and especially to Stephen, because he was really close with her. Mm-hmm. And so this is kind of a turning point for Stephen in his faith, where he is, like, very angry at God, very much blames God for this, which is, like, very understandable. Like,
that's a natural reaction. Yeah. I don't care how old you are.
Yeah. Like,
what religion you are, like, that's...
That's a normal reaction. So this is kind of when he starts to just, like, reject religion kind of mm-hmm. altogether. His kids, he still, like, his kids would still go to church, like, with their grandparents. Mm-hmm. But he was just like, I'm not going. I'm staying home. We're just going to jump right into some spooky shit. Because about a year later, Lydia, his oldest, came to Stephen one day. And she said that she had seen Aunt Janice, quote, in my closet last night wearing a pretty yellow dress. Which I would just like to take this moment to say, if you're going to come back and appear to me anytime after your death, don't do it in my closet. Stay out of my closet.
I always thought you were going to request that I do it in a pretty yellow dress.
I mean, wear whatever you want.
I mean, yellow's not really my color. But, like, I could probably rock yellow.
I'm sure you could.
I'll come in a pretty purple dress.
Okay.
Because that's my color. Yeah. That and green.
Yeah. But just stay out of my closet. Don't. First of all.
Maybe you have something I want to wear that, like, maybe I don't like the purple dress that I'm wearing and I'd rather wear something else.
Like, the closet. I just.
Maybe I want to prank you by coming back and appearing in one of your outfits.
I'm trying to imagine if I saw any beloved deceased relative, like, the person that I would want to see the most. I'm like, if I saw my grandmother in my closet,
I feel like if you saw me in your closet, you would be shocked, and then I think you'd be pissed.
Yes,
because you'd be like, dang it, I knew you didn't die. This is a whole elaborate prank.
True. If I saw my grandmother in my closet, first of all, my closets are very small. There's no room.
Yeah.
But
no, I'd be like, you're wrinkling everything.
Yeah. But also, I'd be a little sus. I'd be like, what you doing in there?
Well, you know, like, little kids. And mm-hmm. I know that Lydia is, you know, we've already said, like, 10 or 11 or so, probably, at this time. I'm assuming. Like, you said when everything started.
Well, this is a year after Janice dies, so it's 1994.
Okay.
So she's 5.
Yeah. All right. Kids around that age,
mm-hmm.
that's what the age of the there's a monster under my bed.
Yes.
Or there's a monster in my closet.
Yes.
So.
This is why I don't love that she, I don't love it. So, anyways, Aunt Janice allegedly told Lydia not to tell Stephen about her. Because Stephen wouldn't understand. And Stephen was like, okay, you were probably having a dream, honey. Go back to bed or go back to whatever you were doing.
Thank you for telling me.
Thank you for disobeying your ghost aunt, but
you little snitch.
Yeah. She literally said not to tell, but
mm-hmm. way to not follow instructions. See if I ever come to you with anything after I die.
Okay. So, Stephen's life is about to get worse.
Delightful.
It's This is why I had to jump ahead and know that he had a happy ending. Okay. So, a year after this, so 1995, Stephen's wife...
No.
...is like, I'm leaving.
No.
Yeah. She... I was worried. Well, she didn't die, so she's
alive. I was worried that she was gonna leave.
Yeah, and she says that she never wanted to be a mother, and that she'd only had the kids because Stephen wanted kids.
Eesh.
I only want to point out one thing, like, for her, that's a terrible thing to do. However, this is going to sound horrible because I'm really not trying to defend her in any way. Mm-hmm. Horrible thing to do. However, I know a lot of men who feel this way think that their only option is to then kill their entire family. Leaving is a much better option. Yeah. Still not a nice thing to do. Still well, sucks for everyone.
Well, and also, like, I'm sure a lot of people's, again, I'm not defending her because it's kind of reprehensible. If she didn't mm-hmm. want kids, she shouldn't have had the kids.
Yeah.
Because now they're going to have to suffer.
Yeah.
Men aren't, like, I feel like it's so common, it's stereotypically, like, men are the ones that are painted as averse to children and mm-hmm. families. Yeah. And that's not true. Like, yeah. Obviously, Stephen, he wanted kids.
Yeah.
There's lots of people that wanted kids.
Yeah.
And women are always painted as, like, this vile, villainous creature because they don't want kids. Women are allowed to not want to be moms.
True. Yeah. Very true.
Women are allowed to want to be nothing but moms.
Yeah.
Women are allowed to be anything in between that spectrum yeah. of not a mother and solely a mother.
Yeah.
Like, there is nothing wrong with any of those things.
Yes.
A woman who doesn't want to be a mom, becomes a mom, and then leaves her kids, few things wrong with that.
Yeah. Not good.
So, like, not defending her. I just...
Yes.
I wanted to point out, too, that, like, you know, a lot of people's, I think, is like, oh, what a soulless monster not wanting her kids. I'm like, well...
Yeah. Yeah. Like, yeah.
Yes and no.
Yeah. A lot of facets to it. Ultimately... very much sucks for everyone. I'm very grateful she did not choose the murder route.
Yep. That was a point that I had not thought of.
Some people did. I thought of that as I was reading it. I was like, yeah. And we do encourage people to do this when their other option they think is to annihilate the family.
And she might have gone into it thinking, like, I don't really want kids, but he does, and maybe I'll like it.
Yeah. I think that was the... she'll grow into it or something.
Yeah, Sheldon and I, when we first started dating, he didn't want kids. And it wasn't that he was, like, vehemently against kids. It mm-hmm. was more of, like, a... when I pictured my future, I never really, like, envisioned or, like, desired to have children in that future. Yeah. And I was like, well, if this is something that you are vehemently opposed to or something you don't think you'll ever want, you need to tell me now.
Yeah.
I need to... exit this relationship because this is like I definitely want.
Yeah.
And now we'll be hanging out and he'll just be watching Critter and just be like, I'm so glad we have him. Like, aww. I never pictured this for my future, but like I couldn't be happier.
Hello.
So it is possible to think that
yeah,
you know, I don't want kids and then
yeah.
you know, still be a little unsure going in and then turns out, oh wait, yeah. I really yeah. wanted this.
Yeah.
Or I'm really enjoying this now, yeah. now that it's here.
Yeah. So, in addition to saying, I didn't want the kids and I'm leaving, she also said, also, I haven't been paying rent for 6 months, and so you guys have a week to find a place to live.
What?
I know.
Which is, what has she been doing with that money?
I don't know, but also, what kind of fucking landlord do they have? Probably the best landlord of all the situations they're about to be in, who's like, I guess you can keep living here. I'll float you along for 6 months, and then you gotta go. But, like, that bitch.
Did she, like, take the money and put it in a separate, like, a getaway account?
I guess she must like, have.
I'm planning to leave, but I need some money.
Yeah. And, like, that was the part where I was like, oh, I'm skeptical of this because, like, wow, what a bitchy move. Like, surely no one could be that heartless. It's
a real dick move.
I know.
Like, it's one thing to just leave your kids and your husband, but...
but then to be like, also,
I'm going to leave you homeless.
Homeless, basically, yeah. But then, so, then, like, they're about to have a bunch of terrible landlords, and then I was like, oh, wait, every landlord I've ever had has been awful, so never mind, I'm back on board with believing everything. Steven is now like, okay, I have to learn how to, A, cope with another, like, huge blow to me, and also I have to learn how to single parent my children, and I also now have to find a place that, A, I can afford, and B, can fit four people, because it's him and three children, which is, like, a lot.
Some of them are barely school age, so what is, like, what is the childcare situation gonna be?
Yeah.
That, like, oh my gosh.
Yeah. So, luckily, Steven's parents are, like, amazing angels sent from heaven, because they move in with them for a little bit as they, like, get their feet.
Yeah, so he can work, save up some money.
Yeah, and I think his parents watch the kids a lot for him, which is, like, very nice.
Save money on child care there.
Yeah.
I guess, was Steven's wife a stay-at-home mom?
I want to say that she worked, because I kind of got the impression that, like, they were also losing an income when she left. Mm-hmm. So, but I don't know. He doesn't really get into specifics about that.
I asked that because I'm like, well, why wasn't she paying rent?
Like, I know!
What was she doing with that money? Like, especially if she was working, like, obviously she could have been putting her income towards her own little getaway plan.
Yeah. Well,
why couldn't she still pay rent?
And you would also think,
it's one thing to not want your kids. It's something completely different to not want a roof over their head.
Yeah, to, like, want harm to come to them.
Yes!
Yeah, it's...
Okay, now she's a heartless monster.
Yeah.
For sure. Like, I didn't want to call her a heartless monster for not wanting her kids, which kind of she is. But now she for real is.
Yeah, like...
That is absurd.
Leave and do your own thing, but,
I
like...
I hug my child.
Don't cause harm to the people. I don't know. So, their first place that they get after this is a two-bedroom apartment for one adult and three children. They stay there for 2 years.
Well, thankfully, they're all still pretty young to where, like, the girl doesn't need her own space from the boys.
Yes. But they pretty quickly outgrow that.
Well, she was also pretty quickly approaching that time where she needed space from her younger brothers.
Yes. So then they find a house that they rent. However, this house was next to some really nosy neighbors, where one of them was a peeping Tom.
Delightful.
Yeah. So as soon as they found that out, they were like, oh, we have to find a new place.
Was he a pedophile peeping Tom?
Unclear. The way I think that Steven described it was, like, his mom caught him looking through their window one time when she was watching the kids. Mm. And it was just creepy. Okay. I think anytime someone's looking through your window,
yeah,
get away from my house.
I don't know. I think peeping Toms are usually associated with, like, a sexual thing.
Yeah, that's true. He did call him a peeping Tom, so I guess that's why I'm using that term.
But, like, really, I guess anybody looking in your window qualifies as a peeping Tom.
Yeah.
It's just, I guess, in at least in my mind, it's always associated with it.
Yeah, that's true. Probably not Major good intentions egg. Anyone who's, who's looking through your window. Yeah. I just gotta check that one.
Yeah.
I know.
I keep, because it's the curtain is slightly ajar, I do keep looking over there.
It was actually in this house that Steven had his first paranormal experience, where he was in the house by himself. He got out of the shower and goes into the kitchen, and all of the kitchen cabinets and drawers are open. Which, no thank you, goodbye.
That's not a paranormal experience in my house. That's just my husband.
Well.
He's not that bad.
That's how Steven rationalized it. He was like, I must not have noticed it before. It was probably the kids, like, just looking for something and left it all, whatever. However, this kind of poltergeist where they're just like, oh, no thank you, goodbye.
I think we need to do a poll.
Poltergeist.
Very nice.
Thank you.
What is worse? Somebody going through cabinets and drawers and leaving them open? Or when somebody's looking for things and they open and slam the doors back? Ooh. Like, you know, because, like, some people, you're like, oh, not in there, and they just close things.
Uh-huh.
But other people, and it's not, like, anger-fueled or anything.
Yeah.
They're just, they're just loud
people. Yeah, just like chaotic.
What would be worse to you, listening to the slamming of somebody looking through things or somebody not closing all of the doors and drawers?
Mm, I know for me, it would be not closing all the drawers.
That's my knee jerk, but I really think the slamming would get to me because, like, Jory barking at the thunder was just ratcheting up my stress levels.
Yeah, I can see that. Yeah. I just know so much of my stress and anxiety depends on my environment and how it looks. And a lot of what Jerick and I work on is, like, if I have it a certain way, and I not have it a certain way, that makes it sound like, but, like, if I have the house clean or, you know, if I've just spent an hour deep cleaning our kitchen and you go make breakfast, please don't leave all the dishes out. I just deep cleaned the kitchen. Please at least have the courtesy to put the dishes in the dishwasher and wipe the counter down or something.
And so that's kind of how I am too, but, like, my mess is okay. Like, my clutter is fine. It's my organized chaos. Your mess is, your clutter is mess. It is, it drives me up a wall. I'm like, why is this single document here? Why can you not put, your koozie is on the counter. Why is it there? It needs to be over there in the koozie spot. Yep. And it drives me bananas.
Oh, yeah. No,
I feel That's actually an ADHD thing, too.
Yeah, I feel you. I've actually today decided two of my rooms in this house are getting redone. Painted. All I'm doing is painting and getting new curtains. And I'm doing it on a budget. And I did consult a designer, sort of. My cousin, Ginger. Hello. Thank you. Oh, I'm also getting a new comforter. But this all came out of, like, I hate our bedroom. I hate the aesthetic. I hate the way it makes me feel. It's not clean. It's not nice. It's not cozy.
No, your home is different. Your sanctuary.
Exactly.
And so, like, when mine is cluttered, when I feel like my home life is cluttered, I feel like everything in my life is cluttered. My brain is already super cluttered. Like, I want peace in my sanctum. Yes.
I told Jerick, I was like, this room, this corner where I've done this wall, my favorite room in the house. And I was like, I want all my walls to be really dark. I was like, I know you're not supposed to want that. I'm doing the bedroom dark. I'm doing the parlor dark. Oh, I cannot wait for a dark-ass parlor. Ah!
See, now, a parlor slash a library, dark gothic, dark cozy. Dark academia, I think, is the aesthetic I would totally go for. Where I want light and airy for everything else because I want to breathe. And I feel like my house is sometimes, because it's so cluttered, because every time I start making headway on clutter, my dad will come up and he'll bring a carload of stuff that I then have to go through. And a lot of it's like sentimental crap that I have to decide whether to keep or to throw away. And my husband's no help because he's like a level one, maybe a level two hoarder.
Oh my gosh, my
And he hates throwing things away. And I'm like, just get it out of my house. And then we go up to the cabin and it's three rooms, four if you count the bathroom. Because you got the two bedrooms, the bathroom, and it's an open, small living room, kitchen area. And while we were up there, you know, I did a lot of cooking. I did a lot of cleaning. I did a lot of taking care of the kid, like, and entertaining family. Like, I was super mom. And, like, it wasn't a problem. Like, I mopped floors. I did a lot of cleaning and keeping up with things. And it's so much easier to keep that small space clean.
Yeah. Well, there's not as much stuff there, too.
And also the fact that it's not cluttered makes me just feel more relaxed and more energized because I'm not oppressed by my stuff.
Yeah.
And part of the problem with our house here is that it's not just my stuff. It's his stuff that I can't throw away and I can't go through. And anyway, I'm sorry, folks.
I know exactly what you're talking about. Because I also had that thought today, too, where I was like, we should just declutter our house and throw away half our shit. I was like, we don't need this closet here. Everything in it can probably be thrown away, except my wedding dress. And throw it away. And then we can use that space and expand our bathroom and have a bigger bathroom where we don't have to put more stuff. We can just have more space. And we can get rid of all of our stuff. I was like, we don't need anything over here except for the sewing machine. Just get rid of all of it.
One thing that I've done is in all things, if so, I'm like, hey, do we need this? Like, oh, no. Like, my husband's solution is put it in the attic. I'm like, okay, but our attic is eventually going to run out of space.
Yeah.
So if I ask, can I throw this away?
Mm-hmm.
And he says no. And I leave it somewhere. Like, I leave it out in plain sight. And if after, like, a month or two, it's been in plain sight and hasn't been used,
mm-hmm.
I put it less in sight. Yeah. And after a while, if it hasn't... So basically, like, 6 months later,
yeah,
if he hasn't used the thing, I throw it away. Yeah. And I don't tell him.
Let's move on. So they get out of the house with the
peeping Tom.
And the poltergeist. And they move into another apartment. This one is a three-bedroom, but they have a very nosy landlord in this one.
Why are people all up in their business?
I don't know. And, like, with this, I'm like, I get it. Like, my last the landlords that literally stressed me out so much that I was like, we're buying a house because I can't stand it. I got you. Like, I understand. So, while they're living here, Stephen gets a new job. It is May of 2000 when he gets this job. So, he starts making some more money. He's able to, like, upgrade the living space a little bit. So, in what I believe is spring, unclear, of 2001, someone, which I don't know who, contacted him about a house that was available. It was a two-story, three-bedroom, two-bath for $600 a month.
Well, even in the 2000s economy, I feel like that is a little bit of a red flag.
So it was, that's the equivalent of about $1,000 a month today, which is still pretty good for three bedrooms, two baths.
Yeah. Like, and that's also in like the small rural area.
Yeah.
Like, so we're not like a super small rural town, but yeah. We're adjacent to that.
Yeah.
And I mean, trying to find a rental in the first place.
Yeah.
But yeah, trying to find a rental of that size.
Yeah.
Like, and there's going to be lots of other restrictions on that, like no pets. And
yeah.
It probably had previous smokers or yeah. something. Like.
And, like, it's got a yard, it's got, like, a basement, it's got, like, you know, nice stuff.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, and this is a story called The Union Screaming House, so, like, it's not, spoiler alert, it's not going to be nice, but. Okay, so this is
what... I think we know why the price tag was low. Or we're about to find out, at least. Yeah.
So this is what the listing for the house, this is, at least in the book, this is how it read. Three-bedroom house for rent in Union. Full in-town living, near most schools and the city park. Perfect for families. A full country kitchen with up-to-date amenities. Large living and dining area with original woodwork intact. Two bathrooms with mudroom. Full basement with fruit cellar attached. Large front porch and backyard, perfect for children. The right house at the right price for the right family.
Hmm.
Yeah.
It's one of those, I don't know if this is the right phrase, but like it's a backhanded compliment kind of thing. Like it starts out sweet. It's a Sour Patch Kid.
Yeah.
It says something, you're like, oh. And then it says something else and you're like, oh.
Yeah. When it's, yeah, the right.
Like the right place. Or the right house at the right place. You're like, yeah. For the right family.
Yeah, that.
You know, updated amenities with original woodwork. Like, so there's some quirks.
Yeah.
Because, like, sure, my house, built, you know, 120 years ago, has a lot of updated amenities. And there's also a lot of original woodwork. But that also means, like, I think part of the reason of this cough and my sickness is my freaking house. I think there's mold in there.
Yeah.
Because, well, this rain coming through, we've got two layers of windows. We've got the original windows, and then we've got the new storm windows. And water gets in between them.
Mm-hmm. We also have that same problem with ours.
It's very stressful and upsetting.
Okay, so they go to the open house, and by they, I mean Stephen and Lydia. He made a point of saying that for some reason, potential landlords got, like, spooked by the boys, And so he just would always leave them, like, with his parents.
I wonder if they were just rambunctious little boys.
I don't know. He also... Also always made a point, which I'm sure he meant only lovingly, but only... I'm sure he meant all of this in jest and in love. But poor Matthew, the youngest, not a chapter in this book passes without him mentioning how much Matthew loves to eat. And I'm like... We get it. I got it. Matthew's a big kid. He loves to eat.
He's a chonky boy.
Probably.
I mean, I know people, I love to eat, but I'm not chonky.
I mean, I love to eat as a kid too, and I was a chonky kid. And I probably wouldn't have appreciated my dad putting that in a story, but I was also a little girl, so. Okay, so they couldn't bring the boys to the open house because they, I don't know, scared everyone.
I mean, were they creepy? Like, was little Matthew just sitting there with a chocolate bar, just like, or a lollipop, just licking it and making weird eye contact with the landlord? Like,
I don't think so.
I'm hungry.
He seems...
Wins dinner. Like, digging around in his belly button, wins supper.
He seems... They both seem like very sweet children.
Yeah. I'm sure it was just they might have just been rambunctious boys.
Or just, like, maybe the sight of, like, the whole family was, like... This is a lot.
Oh, a lot of young kids that like to break things and draw on walls and
And make messes. If you just say, like, oh, I've got two other kids, it's hearing it is a little easier to take than seeing it.
Yeah.
So anyways, Stephen and Lydia go to the open house where they get a tour from the landlord whose name is Mr. Winters. And Mr. Winters...
Allegedly. I did not mean to say that mid-yawn.
That's okay. Just stifle my yawn now because it's contagious. So Mr. Winters is an eccentric older gentleman who wore brightly colored wool shirts. Remember, it is springtime. And a crooked wig. Why he wore... I don't know. He was... dancing to the beat of his own drum.
Cool.
So he gives them this tour. And, oh, I don't have a dossier, but I did find some pictures of the interior of the house that I will show you. Don't mind the pictures.
I don't want to know.
It's the snap piece that Kelly didn't eat. So that's the exterior of the house.
Okay.
And if you scroll to the, whatever, scroll and, okay. So, their living room had a cherub wallpaper border.
Yep.
Which we love.
Nope.
And it was connected to the family room, and they were separated by wooden columns. So, that was the original woodwork. There's a large kitchen with a mudroom attached to that that led to the back door. Two bedrooms were upstairs. One was downstairs. One bathroom was in the mudroom, and one was at the bottom of the stairs. So both bathrooms were downstairs. And then the basement had a butcher's shower, which I thought was like, I think it's just a hole in the wall where a shower used to be. And it also had a fruit cellar that led to the backyard. So that's the house. And they... tour it, and they're like, we love it. It's big enough for us. The price is, like, on point. We are going to apply for this house and, like, hope that we get it. But there's a ton of other people applying for it. So
well, everybody's hoping they're the right family.
Exactly. So they put in their application, and they're just like, hope for the best. So the night after the open house, Matthew, our buddy Matthew.
Chalky boy.
Sweet little Matthew. Poor guy. Oh my gosh. He like really got like the rotten end of the deal here. He comes running into Steven's room. They're like back at their apartment, by the way. He comes running into Steven's room in the middle of the night and he says, Daddy, he was in my room. Yeah. And Steven's like, who was in your room? And Matthew says, a man. And Katie, I just need to know, like, 5 years from now, if Critter wakes you up in the middle of the night and is like, Mom, there's a man in my room, what are you going to do?
Grab the fucking gun.
Right? Like, that's very different than, like, there's a monster in my room. There's a man in my room.
Yeah, no, I'm going to have, like, a little spray bottle that I, like, decorate, and it says monster spray, and it's just water that, like, when the monsters come, I spray under the bed, and we're good to go. Don't have a bottle.
For a man.
I mean, I guess I technically do. It's just called mace.
There's a man in my room. Okay.
Yeah, no, that's when I wake Shelton, or more realistically, tell Critter to get in bed with Dad and try and tell Shelton to, like, I don't know, call the police or something, and then I get gun and investigate, because, let's be real, Shelton's not waking up for that. I love my husband. He is wonderful for so many reasons. He is a great dad and a wonderful provider. But he sleeps like a freaking dead sometimes. He does not wake up well.
I was going to say, you can say what you want about him, because famously, he doesn't listen. Well, Steven is a braver person than me. Because, like, if I was a single parent who didn't have someone else to wake, because I would also, Jarek is very good about waking up in an emergency situation, or I'm very good at, like, waking him up.
What is an emergency? I could handle it. Also, like, the year of waking up in the middle of the night to feed Critter. Like,
yeah, there you go.
I can't tell you how many times Shelton will wake up in the morning and be like, oh, wow, Critter did really well last night. And, you know, like, he's sitting there with, like, hair everywhere, bloodshot eyes, twitching. And I'm like, oh, he did well, did he?
Did he? Tell me.
He didn't wake up and cry once last night, huh? No, not five times, certainly, gosh. Like I was up with him. But he was never really that bad, actually.
Good. Okay, so Steven, I guess, is not freaked out by Matthew saying that there's a man in his room. Because Steven goes into his room and is like, let me check for monsters. Does the whole, like, check under the bed, check in the closet. And is like, there's no monsters, there's no man. So he lets Matthew spend the rest of the night in his room. Mm-hmm. And
that's fair.
Very fair. If I was Matthew, I would be having nothing but that. And Steven, before he goes back to bed, he goes to get a drink of water. And as he is coming back into his bedroom and turning the lights off, he sees, quote, the shadow of a man run by. And he assumes, again, that he is just seeing things and he's, like, gotten freaked, you know, that, like, whatever Matthew said is just, like, freaked him out. I would like to suggest, Stephen, if you're listening, that you had a home invader that night and that there was actually a man in your house. Because a shadow of a man could belong to an actual man who your child could have seen. I hate both scenarios. I hate if it was a real person, and I also hate if it was a ghost person. Both are terrible. I think I hate it being a real person more.
Yeah, definitely.
That's terrible.
I feel like real people are, like, 99 times more harmful than ghosts.
Well, because they can, like, 100% cause you harm. Mm-hmm. Ghosts were still kind of, like, the jury's out.
We're on the fence.
Like, can they cause you harm? I don't know. Maybe.
There's some stories where, like, people are, like, super assaulted by ghosts. And then there's other stories where people are married to ghosts. So, like,
true. We have covered one. We may be about to cover the other. So, you know. Yep. So, about a week later, they get a phone call from Mr. Winters, who's like, congratulations, you are the right family for the house. So, you get the house.
Wow, without even meeting Matthew.
I know. And Mr. Winters insists on meeting Stephen at a restaurant to sign the paperwork. Mr. Winters is always, like, very late for meetings, by the way. Hmm. I don't know what that means, but it always happened.
Yeah, it's just a personality thing. Like, it probably means nothing. It's just such a significant personality trait that it's mentionable.
Yeah.
Like, your brother-in-law. It's just always a thing.
Is he always late to stuff?
You're cute.
I hadn't noticed.
It would be, and like, honestly, sometimes Bianca's late to things too, and I'm like, so which one of them is it, or do they make each other worse?
You mean like her own birthday party?
Well, that was actually Connor's fault. Because he took forever to get ready so that we could get her out of the house.
Oh my gosh.
That by the time we got her out of the house, it was the time that he had told everyone to come over. So we couldn't just turn around and be like, oh, go home.
And then he didn't bother to tell any of us. So we showed up, like, ready to surprise her, and he was like...
So basically he told everyone, show up at 2, and she didn't leave the house until, like, 1:45.
Yeah. And so we get there, and he's like, help me clean the house and set up for a party. And we're like, excuse you. Oh, family. Mr. Winters also insists that they do the walkthrough inspection of the house during the day, light hours. And he says this is just because he doesn't like to drive at night.
If he's an older man, that's totally understandable.
Yes, definitely, for sure.
Well, I mean, I wouldn't blink at that.
Yeah, this is true. This is true. So, move-in day comes, and they move everything into the house. And Lydia wants them to hang a large picture of two angels in the living room, because there's a theme that we have to follow in the living room. I can only assume that we're talking about, like, the Raphael two angels, like the little cherub. You know what picture I'm talking about? The
painting? Probably.
Okay. Probably. It's very famous. If not, sorry, that's what I pictured in my head. Anyways, so Stephen's like, sure, this is our angel-themed living room. This is what we're hanging up. So he hangs up this picture that they already had, I guess, which I love. Hangs it up.
Well, it sounded like they were fairly religious before he lost his sister.
Yes. I guess it would be like us hanging up our Black Jesus painting, mm-hmm. If we had a house that had like a crucifix border. I love explaining that painting to people, by the way. So he hangs up the painting, walks away, and the painting immediately falls off the wall. So he rehangs it. It falls off again. So he rehangs it.
There can only be one kind of angel in this room. Just the border.
Just the border. I know. They're like, we don't like the theme. He rehangs it 3 times before it finally stays. And the second time he does it, he said he actually felt a rush of air go past him before the painting, like, hit him in the back of the legs. And again, he's just like, oh, weird. I'm like, Stephen! Well, I mean,
kind of like the shadow of a man running through your house. It's easier to tell yourself that you're seeing things than to believe that there's somebody in your home.
Yeah, that's true.
Like, your brain protects you from truth sometimes.
Yeah, true. And, like, you've also just paid, like, first and last month's rent and moved all of your stuff in, and you also don't have anywhere else to go. So, like
think about people who have experienced traumatic events that can't recall them or can't fully recall them. Yeah. Like, their brain is protecting them from that memory.
This is true.
It's weird how your brain is smarter than you.
It is. Like, on that.
It's like, no. You can't handle the truth.
Oh my gosh.
Sorry, I didn't say that with the right inflection. You can't handle the truth. That's your brain.
I wish my brain would do that sometimes. For my anxiety.
I think that is your brain being like, instead of the truth, let's come up with all these crazy... Your brain is not, you can't handle the truth. Your brain is Charlie from Always Sunny with the conspiracy board.
Yeah, my brain is like, here's a bunch of stuff to be afraid of that normal, no one else is afraid of.
Normal, healthy brain. You can't handle the truth.
Hannah's brain.
Anxiety brain, because I get like this too.
Yeah.
Charlie Day conspiracy board.
Yes, exactly.
There is no... I forget the name of the person.
Oh, yeah.
They don't exist.
What was... Excuse me. What was the whole, like, twist of that? Was it that, like...
The person did exist.
And he just
hadn't been delivering the mail. And they're like, actually, no, that person does exist. And they're, like, really pissed they haven't gotten any of their mail.
Oh my gosh.
I want to watch that episode.
You should. So, also, on move-in day, the children notice, which they think this is hilarious, that when neighbors are walking by their house, they will cross to the other side of the street. And they're like, isn't this funny, Dad, that no one will walk by our house? They just always cross to the other side of the street. Which, to be fair, if I were a neighbor in that neighborhood and I knew about this house, I would also not be walking on the that. Like, I would do the same thing. Like, they watch a bunch of people do this, and Steven's just like, we just must have unfriendly neighbors. Weird. Then that night, so Lydia is sleeping upstairs in her room, and then Steven and the boys are downstairs because they haven't put the boys' rooms together yet. So they're all sleeping in Steven's room downstairs. Lydia ends up coming downstairs to sleep with them too, because...
I don't blame her.
Yeah.
Like, you don't have to tell me the because. I don't blame her. Like, yeah, I get it. Being alone in a new... Like, I have a hard time falling asleep in new places.
Mm-hmm.
Even places that I've been to dozens of times before. Like, even places that are mine. So, like, my first night at the cabin...
Yeah.
I always have a hard night or a hard time sleeping.
Yeah. Well, her reason is because her closet door kept opening. Not because Aunt Janice was in there. And she said it sounded like boxes were being moved around in the next room. To be fair, Lydia is also, like, the bravest child I have ever heard of. She was just like, my closet door kept opening, and it sounded like boxes were moving, so I came down here. Just like...
Seems like it was more of a nuisance to her, yeah, than something, like, that actually scared her.
Jeez. Okay, so...
Meanwhile, my house, like, creaks and pops, and I'm like... During the day, I'm like, meh. At night, I'm like, oh,
I know. Okay, so they settle into the house, and by late May, this is one Sunday afternoon, the kids have gone to church with their grandparents, they've come back, and the whole family is now working in the backyard, and they love doing this because they now have a backyard to work in.
Fair.
And one of the boys suggests that they water the grass, because I guess the grass is, like, dead.
AKA, let's play in the spring.
Yeah, whatever. So, Steven sends both of them to get the garden hose, which is in the basement. So, both Michael and Matthew go off, and then after a little while, Michael comes back. And Steven's like, where is your brother? And Michael's like, I don't know. Thought he was right behind me. And then they all hear Matthew screaming. So they run inside, and poor little Matthew is in the kitchen, and he is shaking and pointing at the basement door, which presumably is closed at this point. And he tells them that there was a monster in the basement and that it chased him up the stairs.
Ugh. Awesome.
And Steven, again, bravest person in the world, is like, no, there's not. I'll go check. And just goes into the basement. And he's like, Matthew, come down here and look. And Matthew's like, I'm not going down there. No, thank you. You can...
To be fair, as a parent, I would probably be doing the same thing.
Yes.
Like, again, I come up with my magical spray bottle of monster stuff. Be like, all right, I got my monster spray in case we see anything.
This is true.
I've sprayed. Now it's safe. You can come down here.
You're also much braver than me. We've established.
Again, if this was daytime.
Oh, yeah. It is.
Nighttime,
yeah, okay.
Different story. Like, we will worry about the monster in the morning.
We'll put a pin in the monster for now. Because he doesn't entirely go away. So, Steven does his monster check. Somehow convinces Matthew that there is not a monster down there, or that, like, everything's okay and he can stay in the house. I don't know. Because they, like, carry on with their day. And then later that night, everyone's, like, winding down. The kids are watching TV, and Matthew's like, I'm going to go to the bathroom. So he goes to the bathroom and he starts screaming again. And then he runs out.
Is he the reason that it's called the Screaming House?
I wish he was. And he tells Steven, quote, "It came after me again," meaning the basement monster. I hate this part so much. Okay, there's another quote from the book. He said, "I looked up at the steps," because the bathroom is at the bottom of the steps. So he's like, "I left the door open so I could hear you guys." Smart, if you're scared of the house. Mm-hmm. But now you can look up the steps. Look up the stairs. Okay, so he says, "I looked up the steps and that's when I saw it. And it came rushing down the steps at me." And when Stephen asked him what the monster looked like, Matthew said it was a monster clown.
But again, I can totally see as like an adult, a child telling, like, it's a common thing for kids to be afraid of clowns.
But why is it in your house?
Because kids have very active imaginations and...
Katie, you're part of the problem.
I'm empathetic with Steve here.
Like, I would not,
like, I can just imagine that, like, as an adult responsible for children, like, you want to calm their fears, yes, not feed into, yes, them.
This is
so, like, you want to calm the child,
yes,
and then freak out on your own.
Yeah.
So it's like, okay, no, everything's fine, buddy. Let's go to bed. And then I'm going to go, you know, pour myself a glass of whiskey. And it's going to shake the whole time because now I'm freaked the fuck out.
This is why you're such a good parent.
I don't know about that.
I also love that you are able to relate so much with Steven and I am able to relate so much with Matthew. It's this scared 10-year-old.
You are my child. It's okay. I'll protect you.
Thank you.
Well, I'm just saying, like, I mean, I'm barely a parent. Like,
you've been a parent for a year and a half.
Not quite. 16 months to the day.
A year and 4 months. Close. Close enough. I did math real quick.
Yeah. So, like, and I haven't even gotten to the good stage of parenting. Like,
you handled a very legitimate fear tonight.
Poop in the tub.
The poop. That could very easily be just like a monster clown.
Yeah, well, Shelton apparently had to come in as backup because I put him to bed like minutes before Shelton came in. And he, you know, when I put him down, most nights he doesn't go down right away. He'll like, meh, 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 a little bit. Like, just not cry, but just kind of like talk to himself a little bit before he goes to bed. Apparently after I left and got here, he woke up crying again and needed some comforting. So Shelton went in and, like, snuggled him. And Shelton said, "I told him about the time that I pooped my pants in kindergarten. I think that helped settle him."
All right, I need to hear that story now, Shelton. Oh, my gosh.
Next time you, like, wake up in the middle of the night and you, like, "I just saw a shadow of a man in my house. Shelton, will you tell me the kindergarten story?"
Shelton, tell me about the time you pooped your pants. Any time that you pooped your pants will do. Oh, my gosh.
I wonder if he has more adult pooped my pants.
Yeah, those are the
stories.
Ones I want to hear about, really. Oh, gosh.
Anyway, yeah, no, I haven't gotten to the good stuff of having to deal with things like this for kids. Mm-hmm. I know that, like,
well, if you ever tell me that
being responsible for a small child, your first priority is to calm them the fuck down.
If you have to tell me if Walker ever claims that there is a monster clown in your house so that I know to never come to your house.
Oh, I can almost guarantee that at some point he's gonna do that creepy kid thing where, like, "Oh, look, the man in the corner won't stop staring at me." Oh, and you're gosh. Like, "There's no man in the corner." Like, no, he's right there and he's looking at me.
Oh my gosh. I wonder if he'll do that thing. I saw a video on TikTok that was so creepy.
Kids are just creepy like that.
This was like a 2-year-old or like a, I don't know, he might have, yeah. Because he was like kind of babbling or whatever. He was like kind of talking. And his mom was just, yeah, his mom was just like filming him or whatever. And he was standing by a doorway and she's just like filming him being cute or whatever. And he kind of gets distracted for a minute because he looks into the room that he's nearby and he's looking up and she's like, who are you looking at? Who are you waving at? And he's like, Pop Pop. And she's like, huh? She's like, no, there's no one. What? Who are you talking to? And he's like, Pop Pop. And he's just like pointing. And she's like, shut the fuck up. Who are you talking to? And she like goes in there and turns the lights off, turns the lights on, and there's no one in there. And I'm assuming Pop Pop is dead and yeah. like, you know, obviously not a live person. If your kid starts doing that, if Tali starts doing that, if my kid one day starts doing, no, thank you.
That's one of those things that you can kind of rationalize of like kids' brains, like again, active imaginations, and like especially if Pop Pop had just died.
Yeah.
Obviously, that kid is too young to understand the concept of death. Like, yeah. I'm not a child psychologist, but, yes. like...
You're a scientist, though.
I was.
Once a scientist, always a scientist.
Thank you. I need that on a shirt. Like, if it was a... Especially if it was a recent death, child is too young to understand the concept of death.
Yeah.
The fact that they'll never see this person again. It might have been that they were just... thinking about the person. Yeah. Maybe there was a particular smell because that's the strongest sense tied to memory.
Yeah.
And like, I'll get random whiffs of things for out of nowhere.
Yeah.
That I'm like, and it immediately puts me in a completely different time and place. Maybe there's a smell or a sound or some other like sight. They just looked into there and it triggered a memory of Pop Pop. And so they were in their mind, remembering this person, Pop Pop.
I mean, better...
And they weren't actually seeing them.
Better Pop Pop, I guess, than, the man with the weird hat or whatever.
Yes. Or a monster or something.
Yeah, true.
You know, then again, you know, like, on the less skeptical side of things, kids aren't skeptical. They're more open-minded and they're...
That's true.
You know, they're not... Yeah, their brains aren't trying to protect them from things, I guess.
Yeah.
And so they're, I guess, more open to these kind of experiences. And so the thing is, like, we will never, ever know if it was just a child imagining things or if there was actually something there to see.
Yeah. Ugh. Anyways, tell me if Walker ever does that, please.
I will.
Thank you.
I mean, I probably won't because then you'll never come near him again.
No, I'll come near him. I just won't come into your house. There's a difference. You'll lose your cat feeder.
We've got a little girl that moved in next door.
Oh, okay.
I've got a cat sitter.
Okay. So, Stephen amazingly convinces Matthew to, like, sleep in the house that night. But that night, Stephen wakes up in the middle of the night and saw, quote, an old man wearing a flannel shirt standing in the doorway of the living room just staring at them while they slept. Because I guess they're all sleeping together in his bed. As, again, if I were Matthew, would insist that's the only way I would be sleeping. So there's just this old man wearing a flannel shirt just staring at Stephen and his children while they sleep. And Stephen rubbed his eyes and then... when he looked again, the man was gone. And so, again, Stephen's just like, whew, man, Matthew's really got me freaked out, and I'm seeing things again. Okay. So, throughout their time in the house, they are also noticing that the temperature is always very cold, which they just assume that their AC works really, really well. Which I love. They're also hearing crashing noises from upstairs, which Stephen is chalking up to unpacked moving boxes falling over. He's like, I guess things are just falling over in this house a lot.
But is he ever finding boxes that have been...
Not to my knowledge, no. And then they start noticing that when they are coming home in the evenings, all of the lights in the house will be on. So at first, Stephen obviously blames the kids.
Mm-hmm.
But then one day, he is like, okay, Lydia, you and me are gonna like make sure we turn off all of these lights before we leave. And like you and me both, like two people are gonna confirm, like all the lights in the house are off. And then when they come home, all the lights are on again. So he calls Mr. Winters and is like, hey, have you been in the house? Like, while we were gone?
Plausible explanation. Yeah.
And Mr. Winters is like, no, that's illegal. which didn't stop my old landlords, but whatever. So then Stephen and his dad, like, he tells his dad about it. And they both kind of decide, like, it's probably, like, an electrical problem. Like, probably whatever, it's an old house.
It's one thing if the switches are still off.
Yeah.
But the lights are on, that's an electrical problem.
Yeah.
If the switches are flipped on.
Yeah. And it'd be one thing if you left the lights on and then they were off. Like, if the electricity went out or, like, there was a short. That's one thing. But, like, lights don't usually turn on because of a problem.
Yep.
Okay. So, summer has now come. It is the start of summer break for the kids, which I'm sure they're thrilled to be spending more time in the house.
Well, and Lydia's, what, like 11, 12 at this point?
She is, what did I say? She was born in 89?
You said 88, I think.
88. So she would be 2 years older than me. So in 2001, I was 11. So she'd be 13?
She'd be 12, 13, depending on when she was born. Yeah.
It's like first day of summer break.
2001, I was 12 going on 13.
Okay.
In the summer.
You're Lydia. I'm a Matthew. Love this. Well, you're Lydia / Stephen. I'm a Matthew. You are. You're all the adult, mature characters in this. Okay. So Stephen lets the kids stay up late. He lets them have some ice cream. And then they all sit down to play a game of Monopoly in the living room. This is like the most wholesome.
I love it.
Start good, of summer fun break.
Family time.
Mm-hmm. Although Monopoly, famously terrible family game.
It takes forever.
Yeah. And also everyone ends up hating each other, at least when my family plays it. So as they are sitting there, and I can only presume that like the way they're sitting is that the kids have their backs to the family room, and Stephen is facing the family room, I think.
So are they in the angel room, or is the family room the angel room?
The living room is the angel room.
Okay.
And I think it's like the living room, the family room, and then I guess the kitchen. I don't know. I didn't get really the whole layout. But Stephen is able to look into the family room, and the kids aren't looking in there. So I think their backs are to it. So they're sitting there. They're setting up the Monopoly board, they're figuring out who's going to be the banker, whatever. All of a sudden, Stephen sees an apparition. It is, quote, the dark figure of a man. Its form, quote, seemed to be made of moving, churning, dark gray and black smoke. So Stephen's like, I must be seeing things again. So he looks away. He's like, I'm just going to ignore it for a minute. And then he looks back and it's still there. And he's like, oh, fuck me. And then it starts coming towards them.
That's when I
feel
scared.
So it starts slow and then it gets quicker.
Nope.
And it stops in the middle of the family room and it just stands there and it looks at them. And the kids, like, don't know any of this is happening. Like, Steven's the only one seeing it. And he said he couldn't see its face, but he could feel it staring at them. And then after a while, it just dissolved. And so now, Stephen is like, I have to get the children out of the house without telling them that there was, like, a smoke demon in here. So he's like, hey, let's go back to Grandma and Grandpa's for a soda.
Surprise sleepover.
And the kids are like, what? No, we don't want to. And he said that Lydia, like, kind of caught on pretty quick that, like, something was going on. And she's, like, awesome big sister and was like, no, I'm really thirsty. Let's go to Grandma's. Like, come on, everyone, let's go. he like convinces them that they're like, gotta go. They get onto the front porch and he is locking the door when suddenly a scream comes from the house. Like the house starts screaming. And he literally said it was, quote, the voice of a man screaming. And he said it sounded like someone who was in pain, like just screaming from their house. So naturally they like freak the fuck out, run to their car.
And they all heard this.
Yes, they all heard it. They start driving away, and as they're driving away, Matthew points at the house and he says, quote, the basement monster is standing in the upstairs window. And Stephen looks back and he sees, quote, a black form standing in the upstairs window watching them leave. And so he drives to his parents' house. Like, where else is he going to go?
And I've reached my limit.
I know. And this is when Stephen finally admits to himself and to his parents,
I'm not just seeing things. Matthew's not just seeing things.
I think the house is haunted. So he ends up calling Mr. Winters like the next day and is like, hey, what the fuck is going on with your house? Is it haunted? Oh, by the way, also Stephen's parents are like incredibly understanding. Like he tells them all of this and they're like, okay, let's figure out what to do about it. Like his parents seem like the most amazing people. So he calls Mr. Winters and Mr. Winters obviously is like, no, the house isn't haunted. I don't know what you're talking about. And he's like, okay, well, something's going on. They had gone back to the house, like, with his parents, and I think they started looking around, and they found boxes of stuff in a shed in the back, and it was, like, it looked like stuff that someone had just left, like, that they had been living there, mm-hmm. not in the shed, but, like, stuff you would have kept in a shed and just, like, abandoned. And he's like, there's all this stuff in the shed. There's like birth certificates and like pictures and whatever. And Mr. Winters was like, oh yeah, that belonged to a former tenant. I've been calling her, trying to get her to like pick it up. That just belongs to her. Like, it's fine. And then he like kind of kept like, he would just kind of keep thinking of things. Like he was like, oh, well, you know, I'm Catholic. So like we believe in like spirits or whatever. And he said, one of the former tenants, she did used to say that her father, who had passed away, would visit her in the house. So, like, maybe that's what it is. Or he was like, one of the tenants, you know, he left in the middle of the night, but I think he was a drug dealer and the cops were after him. So, like, that's probably why he left in the middle of the night. And that's probably mm-hmm. some of the stuff mm-hmm. that you're seeing. And then, this one's my favorite. He said one of the tenants liked to burn candles, which, you know who else burns candles? Witches. And he's like, do you like to burn candles, Stephen? And Stephen was like, yes, but like, not for witchcraft. No. For smelly stuff.
And just setting a cozy atmosphere.
Yeah. But that was my favorite one. He's like, candles? Have you been burning candles in the house? So ultimately, Mr. Winters is like, I'll call a priest if you want for an exorcist. And Stephen's like, no, don't do that. Because Stephen, I think at this point, is still like not doing the religion thing. So
I got chills.
I know. So somehow, this is not the event that makes them move out of the house. Somehow Stephen has, like, in the light of day, he's like, maybe that wasn't as terrible as I thought it was.
It sounds just more creepy and freaky.
Yeah.
But, I mean, that figure, mm-hmm. even though it went from slow to fast, which is creepy, it did stop and stare, which is creepy.
Yeah.
But other than that, there didn't seem to be any malevolence.
Yeah. Yeah. So he's like,
it just sounds like there's a tortured soul trapped in the house.
Yeah.
Based on the scream.
Yeah.
Don't and love maybe that. Like the what are these other people doing in my space?
Yeah.
Being more confused and intrigued.
Yeah.
By their presence. Yeah. And trapped in their own torment. I don't know. But yeah. Like, ugh.
I know, I hate it.
I'm, yeah, I don't get freaked out easily, but I'm not doing well here.
So, they're like, we're gonna keep living here. Again, partly because it is not easy to just find a new place to live, and also not easy to just get out of your lease.
Well, and you've got young children. You're like, you're trying to create some stability for them. Yeah. When there's already been a good bit of upheaval, like moving from place to place for various reasons. You know, the loss of their mother. Like, I don't know what kind of contact they've had with her, but like, I know that losing my mother was a different kind of loss, but still, you know, like, you know, I suffered from and probably still deal with abandonment issues, even though my mother didn't choose to abandon me.
Right.
Whereas their mother did. So, like,
yeah.
You know, it took me a while to accept the fact that, yes, I had abandonment issues.
Yeah.
Because I'm like, even though she didn't choose to, she still did abandon me by dying at a young age. Anyway, stability is very important for kids at this age, and like, he sounds like a awesome dad.
Yeah.
Like, really trying his best here. And so creating a stable home environment for him, for them.
Yeah.
Big deal.
Yeah. And like, the kids, I guess, are okay with it. Again, had I been there, I'd be like, I'm living with grandma and grandpa, but whatever. So, one Sunday, not very long after this happened, they were all at home, and the kids were, I think, in Stephen's bedroom, which is the downstairs one, and Stephen is in the family room talking to his mom on the phone. Suddenly, he hears the doors in the house start to rattle, and he thinks it's the kids. So he, like, yells at them to stop after it happened a few times. And Lydia yells back at him. She's like, Dad, that's not us. The boys are asleep and I'm reading. Like, we're not doing anything. Then, like, as Stephen is realizing something is about to happen, something does happen, the temperature suddenly drops. Stephen felt an electrical charge go through him. He also began to smell a foul odor. And then the screaming started again. He said it started softly and then built up until it was super loud. And then he could hear the bedroom doors slamming shut. And the whole house began to shake. His kids started screaming, obviously. And so Stephen is trying to get to them. And obviously the bedroom doors are not opening. Like, a ghost slams the door, it's not going to, like, open well. His mom is, like, on the phone the whole time, like, hearing the house screaming. He's, like, trying to break into his own bedroom to get to his children. There is now a child who is screaming, which is not his own children, just, like, a child joining the regular screaming. There's crashing sounds that are happening. He finally gets the door open. He gets everyone out in the car. They drive to the top of a nearby hill to wait for his parents because he, like, told his mom, like, come get us, come help. And as they are sitting on the hill, they could see their house and they could see a blackness moving from room to room looking for them inside the house. I was like, stop it. So that is the event where Steven's like, okay, we have to move. Like,
we're done here.
Yeah, something is actively now seeking us out.
No, the idea of not being able to get to my children.
Yep.
That's nail in the coffin.
Yeah.
No, we are done with this place.
Yeah. It separated him from his kids, and then also you watched it go through the house and try to find you.
Like, that part, like, maybe they weren't looking for me, us, whatever.
Mm-hmm.
No. Just that not being able to get to my kid thing. Like, I'm just sitting here, like, all but starting to sweat.
Yeah.
Like, No. Do not keep me from my kid. We are done with this place.
Okay, so... Oh, I forgot about this part, too. Okay. So, he's like, okay, we have to move.
He goes back to the house one more time with his parents and his brother, Josh, his younger brother, and his sister-in-law, just to, like, pack up some of the essentials. While they're there, they hear a young girl scream. They also hear disembodied breathing right next to them.
Yeah.
Ugh, I know. They hear whispering upstairs, and then they also smell, like, that foul odor again. And they're like, okay, do you have your stuff? Let's go.
See, after I talked to the landlord, and he was like, do you burn candles?
I'd be like, yeah,
I'd have been like, okay, well, he's not a good source. Hey, look, another neighbor that just crossed the street not to walk in front of our house. Let's go ask them what that's about.
Yeah, yeah.
I would definitely have, like, started talking to neighbors.
Oh, yeah, for sure. So as they're leaving, they're, like, on the porch. They hear movement in the branches of a tree that's, like, directly next to the porch. And then they saw a shadow drop to a lower branch in the tree, quote, as if to take a better look at them. And, like, I think he said that his brother Josh said, they're in the trees. Which, like, sounds like a movie to me. I'm just like, oh my God. So they start running to the car. And as they're running, they hear something drop from the tree to the ground and start chasing them. And they're, like, too scared to look back, so they just, like, get in the car and, like, drive away. And I'm like, it can get out of the house and get into the tree. Like, what is this?
Well, one of the things that I keep thinking, too, is it the house? Which, it definitely seems like, yeah, mostly at the house.
Mm-hmm.
Because I feel like in most haunting stories, spirits are tied to location.
Mm-hmm.
But also, this family seems to be, I guess, very perceptive.
Yeah.
They've had experiences.
Yeah.
Prior to this. Like, yeah. Lydia seeing her aunt. It seems like maybe there is some sort of entity that's following them.
Mm-hmm.
But also, there's already something there at the house.
Yeah.
So which is it? Are they being followed by an entity, or is there something there?
I will say, Stephen later kind of says that he thinks that when he started to, like, reject God and reject his faith, that he, like, opened himself up to, like,
other things.
And so, to me, it kind of implied that, like, something was kind of, like, not following him, but, like, there was some kind of evil that was, like, I guess following him. Because, like, he had the one paranormal experience at the, you know, like, the poltergeist thing. And, like, you know, his sister appearing to, which I'm not convinced that was, but, you know. And then, like, things happening outside of the house, but, like, almost triggered by the house. You know, it's like, mm-hmm. once they saw the house, then things were happening to them, whether they were at the house or not. But I don't know.
Well, I feel like it's one of those things, you know, I mean, you're implying they still had experiences after they left the screaming house?
Well, they had experiences.
Because I know they had the ones prior to moving to the house.
I guess they don't. Well, I mean, the children don't once they leave, to my knowledge. I mean, he doesn't write about them having any more. He kind of continued. Well, he has, I don't know.
Well, it's one of those things that, like, if you're looking for something, you're more likely to find it.
Yeah.
And so it might not be that he was being more open to or perceptive towards experiences, but he was seeing things that either weren't there or that he might have overlooked previously and attaching something to them.
Yeah, that's true. And, like, he also had a bunch of, like, really horrible nightmares afterwards, which...
Yeah, no, I get that.
Probably, yeah.
Again, being locked away from your kids while they're screaming in another room...
Yeah,
sounds that brutal. That is nightmare fuel for me.
Yeah.
Big time.
That doesn't happen again, so don't worry.
If I have a nightmare about that tonight,
no.
I am calling you when I wake up, no. So you'll talk me down from the ledge.
Just go hug your baby. Okay, so the next day, he calls Mr. Winters and demands to be let out of his lease. And Mr. Winters does finally agree to this only if he is able to find someone who will take over the lease. And Stephen is very adamant and makes Mr. Winters promise that whoever he rents the house to next, because he was like, I don't think anyone should live here. Mm-hmm. But he was also like, but also I have to get my kids out of here and I'm not willing to like sacrifice my children mm-hmm. for the sake of like whatever.
It's a morality thing.
Yeah.
Do I subject someone else to this to save my kids?
Yes, yes, is the answer. But he was like, I'll do that, but you have to promise me that whoever rents this house next doesn't have kids, because kids should not live here. Like, something bad is happening here. And Mr. Winters is like, okay, that's fine. I promise. And he says, my cousin is coming down. She's going to rent it. Like, Mr. Winters' cousin is going to come down. Mm-hmm. And Steven's like, all right, well, this lady's, like, related to him. I guess it's fine. But then when Stephen was moving out, like the only other time, well, not really, but he goes back to the house to get the last of his stuff and he sees the new tenants pulling up. It's a family with two small children. So Mr. Winters is just like a dick who lied. Shortly after moving out of the screaming house, Stephen decided to share his story on the internet as a way of coping, because he's having all these nightmares and trouble sleeping.
Yeah, he needs to share it with someone or anyone.
Yes.
Get it out of him.
And this is how he eventually connected with a woman named Helen. So Helen, he calls her Helen March, which obviously is not her real name, but she... in 2004 was the woman who was living in the Union House at that time. So a woman named Sheila, who like he met in like a paranormal chat room or forum or whatever. Mm-hmm. She was like wanting to take pictures of the house. Mr. Winters had told Stephen that it was a dog kennel now, that like he wasn't even renting it to like people. And so Sheila went by there to take pictures. And she called Stephen and she was like, it's not a dog kennel. There's a family living here. And, like, I think you need to, like, do something. So Stephen met the family. And so it's Helen, her husband Charlie, their teenage daughter Kelly, and then her two older children who either belong to Helen or Charlie from previous relationships. So Helen and Stephen ended up connecting over their shared experiences in the house, because it's like still super haunted and like Helen is experiencing the okay. same thing. Charlie did not believe in ghosts and is like choosing to kind of ignore everything that's going on. And so Helen is really kind of finding comfort in Stephen, because like her husband doesn't really, you know, he's just kind of like in denial. So Helen and Stephen end up going to the library together to try and research the history of the house and the land to see if there's like something weird going on there.
Talk to the neighbors.
They don't ever do that, just so you know.
So easy.
So the house was built in 1936 from a Sears catalog kit. Mm-hmm. Should have known Sears. The land used to belong to a Civil War Army officer named John T. Cromwell. However, even though he was a Union officer, he was one of the bad ones. Because the house stood where his slave quarters used to be. And he was also known to be a real asshole. He was particularly cruel and also super powerful, like just within the town. And then there were all sorts of speculations and rumors. One, that he was a Southern sympathizer, that he was involved in the slave trade. there were rumors that he would, like, take care of people that got in his way, and that there were hangings that took place on his property. There's also a rumor. I know, I hate the trees. There's also a rumor that a doctor friend of Cromwell's provided abortions for the prostitutes of the town, and also allegedly performed an abortion on Cromwell's wife when she became pregnant by one of his slaves. Because you have to have a good abortion legend rumor in there. So Helen would also, like, she would call Stephen in the middle of the night when something bad was happening or whatever. So here's some of the stuff that happened to her. Sorry about this one. And I will say, I don't think this was a real baby. Her and her daughter, Kelly, heard a baby crying outside. And when they went to look, they saw a baby in a white christening dress hanging by its feet from a tree outside. Again, it wasn't a real, like, it was like a ghost baby. Like, there wasn't an act. Do you know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. Like, if they went back.
It was an apparition.
Yeah, okay. Stephen later
Because if it was, the dress would be upside down, covering the face. You wouldn't see that it was a baby.
Yeah. And also, like,
because gravity.
Like, it
gravity
it wasn't,
doesn't really exist when you're a ghost, right?
It also wasn't like they called the cops and, like, there was an investigation. Like, it was gone the next time they looked or whatever. But Stephen, like, saw the same thing. Like, he was over there one time and, like, the same thing happened. But this time the baby was dead. Again, an apparition, not, like, okay. Helen would wake up with large bite marks on her body that she got during the night, which I don't like. Oh, I hate this one. I forgot about this, too. She would wake up sometimes to a hooded figure sitting on her bed talking to her. And as she woke up, she would realize that she had been talking back to it, but she didn't know what she had been saying, except that she had been agreeing to something. And she didn't know what she was agreeing to. Aww. But there's just this hood. I hate hooded figure. She also saw a large wolf-like creature in her room at night. This is also something that Stephen saw one time.
I would actually not be freaked out by that.
A wolf-like creature?
I feel like that would be more of a protective entity than a...
This one was...
Unless it looked like an obvious hellhound, I would be like, okay, big doggy, scare the bad big things doggy. Away.
She would also wake up and find Kelly, her daughter, standing over her bed watching her sleep. And eventually she began having intrusive thoughts about killing Charlie and or Kelly. She and Stephen tried several times to find psychics, mediums, or investigative groups that could help, but they all came back with different stories. So they would come back with either a different, like, different numbers of ghosts in the house, different names for them, different reasons for them being there. And they were just like, okay, what's the point of this? They had the house blessed once by a priest, but he did a real shitty job and it didn't work. They were like, he was like real scared and he would just like kind of throw some holy water and leave. And eventually Helen and Stephen formed their own investigative group called the Missouri Paranormal Research, MPR. MPR.
I think that was intentionally misleading.
I like it. I think they still like do stuff today. But finally, Kelly's intrusive thoughts Helen's intrusive thoughts got really, really bad. And she actually did make an attempt on Charlie's life while he was at work. Like, with a knife. She tried to kill him. She had been convinced that he was cheating on her. She told Stephen about it, and Stephen immediately took her to the hospital where she was voluntarily committed. After Helen was committed, Kelly and Charlie moved out of the screaming house. Thank goodness. Kelly got counseling and did really well, apparently. And when Helen was released, she and Stephen went and saw a priest named Father Paul, who came highly recommended because he was a sensitive to the spiritual world. And he prayed over both of them, and Stephen said that he immediately felt like he had been, like, released from, like, whatever spiritual oppression he had been under. also at some point during, like, his relationship with Helen or his friendship with Helen, at some point during all of that, I think is when Stephen kind of, like, got his faith back and, mm-hmm. like, was like, okay, I believe in God again and, like, prayer and stuff like that. Father Paul said that he... I did not mean to laugh. This is not funny. Sorry.
Great.
He said he believed Helen's oppression was much more serious, though, than just what Stephen was going through, and that she was kind of headed towards possession. She continued to show signs of quote-unquote possession, or signs of, like, severe mental illness, changing personalities, violent and erratic behavior, etc. And eventually it culminated in her showing up to Stephen's house on Halloween of 2005 with a gun.
Oh, fun.
However, his cats warned him not to answer the door. So cats saved the day. And when he didn't answer the door, she went to the screaming house and threatened to kill herself before she eventually, like, kind of woke up. And she later would describe these episodes as, like, blacking out and, like, losing chunks of time. She was institutionalized again, medicated. She went to a lot of therapy. She saw mm-hmm. Father Paul a lot. Anyways, she's doing a lot better. I think I said this. Stephen believes that him turning away from God is what opened him up to, like, the demonic activity. And he says that it has been a long, tough road coming back from it. But he is now committed to helping others who are facing paranormal oppression. And, like, that's literally what he does with his little group is he, like, will go to people who are, like, having these things and help them. And this is our happy ending. In 2015, Stephen met his future husband, Rick.
Oh.
And they're happily married.
That was a fun twist.
I know. This is, like, why I found his Instagram, which, by the way, is Stephen_LaChance. Go follow him. It's, like, all memes and, like, pride stuff. It's great. And they now have 5 grandchildren and a beautiful blended family. And I'm so happy that he, like, found his person and also, like, has a beautiful, happy, beautiful family and beautiful, healthy grandchildren. And, like, I could cry. Anyways, that's the story of the Union Screaming House and of Stephen LaChance and the bravest person that I've ever heard of.
Well, if you want to see any pictures from tonight's episode or today's whatever episode, you should check out our Facebook and Instagram at The Tales We Tell Podcast. If you want to see pictures but you don't do the social media, check out our website, thetaleswetellpodcast.com. And if you want to support us and get yourself some sweet, sweet swag, check out redbubble.com. We've got several different logos, including our cute Sasquatches.
Yes.
And just go to Redbubble, search The Tales We Tell. You can put that on anything.
Hell yeah.
And if you want to support us but you don't need the stuff, but maybe, I don't know, early access, commercial-free listening, sometimes some bonus content, and some love notes and maybe some stickers every now and then, become patrons at patreon.com, search The Tales We Tell.
Yay!
And until next week, have a unhaunted time. I don't know. I can't talk. I'm tired.
It's we've had 2 glasses of wine, and also this episode's been going on for 2.5 hours.
Yeah, it's been a night. I'm ready to go.
Okay. We'll see everyone next week. Bye!